This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey, everybody. Jason Cutter here. Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show. Welcome to part three, the future of sales, a conversation with Dr. Tim Butler from Southeastern Louisiana University. If you didn't check it out, make sure to check out part one and part two, authenticity, persuasion, sales process. It's all going to roll into this. Dr. Tim, let's talk about the future of sales. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So let's just dive into it. In between episode two and episode three, we're taking a break. We're recording this, you know, behind the scenes, you know, lift up the curtain a little bit. You know, we're recording these in one session, you know, all back to back. It's not even pretending to be different days. I know some podcasts, they pretend like it's a whole different day. It's like, hey, great to see you again. It's like, no, we're still here. No wardrobe change or anything. But we're talking in between and we're talking about like being buyers and being salespeople and processes and marketing and just, you know, even talking about the painful process of getting an oil change. I was sharing experience. Most people can relate to what that feels like when somebody's just trying to sell you something and you know that's coming. So your guard is up even more. Let's kind of jump off of that in talking about the future of sales. What do buyers want more of and less of from salespeople?
Well, I think buyers are getting more open to sharing information or just accepting that you're taking a lot of data about them and that you've gotten to them in a weird way. But what they're not accepting of is you using that information to just bother them a whole bunch with non-customized, non-relevant outreach. So what buyers want more of, in my opinion, is people leveraging the data that they know they have on you to bring you something of value that sticks out from automated and other types of spam and things that are happening in their inbox or voicemail or LinkedIn, you know, messages and all these things. And so customizing your approach, which shows a couple of things. One is you care enough to do some work, that you care enough about that business, but then you're also trying to make an argument that you actually have something that applies to them. Because I think all of us receive messages for products we don't need at all, that are just not a fit. And I think that annoys us and that makes us ignore even some maybe more relevant outreach.
Yeah. And I see that a lot. And I know that most people can relate to that, especially if you're in business, in leadership. If you have a profile on LinkedIn, you know, of any kind of leadership role, then you're constantly getting messages and emails and things like that. And I have bought from people who have cold emailed me and cold LinkedIn messaged me, like not cold, but like, you know, they're just reaching out. I have no relationship with them. I don't know them. And they had something I wanted and it was customized and it made sense, right? And then there's so many other ones that I get where it's like, why do you think I need 30 appointments a day for my consulting company, right? Like you're just like lumping everything in and it's not. And that just instantly goes in the garbage. And so what do you see that kind of like when it goes wrong, when salespeople are not customizing, when they're just taking data, I know you have a pulse and you're a leader of something, and I'm going to hit it to you. What does that do to buyers all over relative to access to them?
It makes it more difficult to access buyers. So it makes our job harder, right? When there's so much information coming at them, and it hurts each individual company's brand. Because I think what justifies this behavior is, well, 1% of people respond and we're getting some revenue ultimately, and it's not costing us anything. Well, it is costing you something. It's costing you the brand reputation. If you don't want to buy into the idea that it's hurting the sales field because you don't care about the sales field, that's fine, but it's hurting your individual company's reputation. So this is the problem with that, and it makes it more difficult for people who do the things required to acquire a meeting or the attention of a customer to do that.
Where do you see that kind of that balance, or, you know, what do you think from the buyer's perspective? Because you talked a bit about it in the first episode. We're talking about your marketing perspective and just kind of like, how do buyers think? What are they thinking? How to relate to them and give them that value? Where buyers, you said in part two, don't want to deal with salespeople, but they need something. They have an issue. They have a question. They have a goal. They're looking for things like value and to deal with someone. But where is that balance with what they can do on their own now with, you know, what's available on the internet, with at what point should they deal with a salesperson? And then, you know, how does that fit into like what you talked about in part two with Dr. Dover's book of sales processes in alignment with buyers' processes?
Right. So I would say that one thing that's really important is just making sure, like, you get a lot of data and tools. And I've talked to a lot of my former students who are getting access to all these cool technologies, and it's kind of interesting, right? But what you need in salespeople are people who can process that information and use it strategically to tailor a message to that prospect, because that's what people are responsive to. And it goes to your authentic persuasion, right? We crave authentic interactions because there's so much robot talk out there that we're dealing with. Automated algorithms deciding what we see on streaming services or social media, and then outreach from people that are, it's just auto-generated. And maybe that can get better if they're actually using that data to customize it with AI, right? Maybe that will get better, but it's not there yet, right? So what salespeople add is that they can actually process information, that they're using these tools, and then approach someone. Because you're really not, you know, my students going into B2B sales jobs are not trying to trick people into meeting with them, and then they're trick them into having another meeting, and then trick them into buying something. They know that ultimately at the end, they're going to need the product. So the research that you do to customize your outreach is important to qualify that customer. Is this even worth an email, right? Is this even worth the time that you're going to spend? One thing that I've talked about with a former student is, well, he's like, you know, I like to customize it, but I got to cut it off at some point because I could spend an hour on an email, right? And that's probably not a good thing either. But he's got the right idea, which is I got to work efficiently, but I got to put a little bit of effort into understanding who this person is as a human, understanding their personality, their preferred communication type, and then understanding based on their position and their company and their industry, is there a customized, as much as you can before you really talk to them, is there a way to approach them with a somewhat of an understanding of what they could potentially be going through that could align with a reason to spend time talking to you about the solution that you offer that helps with that.
And so that was going to go into my next question from the sales side, is where's that balance with the technology, the outreach, obviously the numbers game, you know, the customizing, and then also the human aspect, right? Like, what should salespeople be focusing on more and more, especially in light of the technology that just keeps increasing these days?
Well, I think that goes to kind of some of the things we talked about in earlier conversations, which is what brings the buyer value at that point is what we should be focusing on, right? So understanding the customer and having empathy for their situation develop leads to opportunities to add value to a conversation, or there's a touch point in which you can deliver them value, build trust and credibility, and then the economic thing that happens flows very naturally if you're able to do that. So thinking about, is there things that are taking up a lot of their time, costing them a lot of money, frustrating them, frustrating their team, and what can I do to show them that I actually have a solution? Because they're going to have to spend some time talking to me, And if they think it's a waste of time, even if you have the right solution, they're not going to do it, right? So what information do I need to provide them that would say, hey, this person might actually be a credible provider of something that can make my day better?
Yeah, it's so interesting that you say that, because I can think of so many times, either myself or watching other salespeople, coaching them, and where it's a perfect fit, right? The customer has a square peg problem, and this is a square peg solution, and it still goes sideways. And thinking about it, where that time where the customer just doesn't think it's valuable, or thinks the process is bad, or the time is being wasted, kind of goes back to what you were talking about in part two, where, you know, sales teams and operations are built around a process that fits some linear thing with all these stages that must occur, versus what does the buyer actually want in that process? And so how do you do that? How do salespeople do that in this day and age? What are you preparing people for, where making sure you're not wasting time, but still, you know, obviously bringing value? So you can't just be quick and to the point all the time, because you want to create the value, you want to find the value, but then where's that balance?
Yeah, that's the big challenge. And I think what we teach them here is to do enough work ahead of time that you can ask educated questions. Mm. Because if you ask a good question, not just a generic one, you display credibility, which enhances trust and gets them to give you a little bit more information. And then that's where adaptability and active listening comes into play, where you say, okay, well, I've done all the work I can leading up to this meeting, but now I have to do the work in the meeting to stay present, listen for that opportunity that exists, where you, it makes, because I feel like you get to that stage with a customer and they want to hang out with you. They want to be in your presence because you're a credible person, but also they just like the interaction. And so getting them to let their guards down and give you information can get, and then maybe, you know, that information leads to you disqualifying them and saying, hey, you know what, you're free to go, right? Because it's not a good fit. That's fine too, because then you've used their time wisely as possible to find that out, right? But usually what you're getting is information about what motivates me, what are my priorities, what is my personality like? And I think being adaptable is so important, because people with strong personalities will offend or turn off people with those opposing personalities. So there's nothing wrong with having a strong personality, but in sales, you have to be more flexible and adaptable and try to figure out, does this person like to talk the whole time? Does this person like to... does this person respond well if you did your homework and you did research and they really like that? You have to be able to read all that and change how you behave. And one thing that comes up when I teach that is that inauthentic, right? Is it inauthentic to change and act different for different people? And I would say no, because you're being just very empathetic and understanding and saying, hey, if I'm going to be able to communicate with this person, I need to behave in a way where that communication can be fostered. And so by doing that, you're giving yourself a gift, because it's going to lead to higher productivity and higher, you know, chance that they would work with you. But you're giving them a gift because you're communicating in a way that makes them feel comfortable and not put up more guards and put you in the category of spam.
Yeah, it makes total sense. And it's always that tricky balance where a lot of it is intent of, you know, being authentic to you, but then also meeting that other person where they want to be met in a, you know, conversation behavior style where, you know, it's kind of the platinum rule mixed with authenticity. And I love that you brought that up. When it comes to technology, because we were talking about that a little bit earlier, where do you see that balance, or where do you see the challenge with the salespeople that you're teaching, or even the marketing people, where You know, there's technology for communication. There's chat, there's SMS, there's email, and people leaning too hard on that to try to scale versus phone calls and video calls and meetings. You know, and where do you see that balance for salespeople, or where do you see one tool leading into another, you know, for communication?
Yeah, I think we need to think about using technology as a way to facilitate smooth interaction. And so to do that right, you need to figure out what that individual buyer prefers, what they respond to, and adapt your strategy that way. Because if you look at, let's say, a demographic situation, like a bank has to market to Gen Z and then baby boomers, and they want to be communicated to differently, right? There's a way to adapt how you're communicating to fit that. So, and technology enables you to do that. And it, technology may enable you to figure out what they would prefer, or what they most likely would prefer. And so you don't always have to figure out how does this individual want to be communicated with. Sometimes the patterns will allow you to kind of lead with that. And then you, when they respond that way, and feel free to ask, right? I mean, you know, if you're on a conversation, say, hey, you know, I'm going to have some follow-up information before our next meeting. You wanted me to text it to you, or would you prefer email, right? And let them tell you how they most prefer to be communicated to. So I think that's important, is the technology is to make you be able to connect with your customer, and your customer to be able to access you when they need you. And so all the technologies you use is to make that smoother. So don't get too lost in, oh, I have all these tools, and it's, and, you know, and don't dehumanize the customer to that point either, where you're saying everything's a process to the point where you don't really see them as a person with problems that you're trying to solve.
Yeah, that's a great point. So many people, if you've done sales for a length of time, you start to get desensitized to the human part, that the other person is a human that has, you know, their human traits and challenges and goals and hopes and dreams. And you're just kind of going through the process and the motions instead of like the H to H part, right? The human to human. And I love what you said, like even asking them, how do they want to communicate, especially in the follow-up, but then also letting the data show, all right, this individual wants to be communicated this way, right? Instead of, you know, trying to look at a whole group, technology is there. Just be able to put preferences in for people and then, you know, go that route and meet them where they are. Where do you see AI, right? Because we're recording this summer 2023. So AI is obviously a hot subject all over the place. Where do you see that helping salespeople? Where do you see that hurting salespeople, you know, in their roles or as a career, as an industry as a whole?
Well, AI can help. And I have some familiarity with doing some projects in my MBA class where I told them to get the questions answered by ChatGPT, but then I made them comment on how right they were. And so I was able to tell, because I had given them some articles to read where they could go to ChatGPT and summarize them. And I asked how good a job, and like, it didn't do that good of a job. So the right answer would have been, well, yeah, I saw that it gave a nice overview of it, but it missed X, Y, and Z. And many of the students did that because they're MBA students and they're generally conscientious. But a few of them, you could catch them because they didn't. So what AI can do, I think, is save you a lot of time, because if you're auto-filling information and saving me composing an email, and it's super, not a 10 out of 10, but it's like a 7 out of 10 on customization, I still would suggest, and I guess the danger part is, don't just press send on that automated thing that was created by AI. You know, read through it, spend a few minutes, and customize it a little further and make sure that it makes sense, because sometimes I've seen AI not make a whole lot of sense. And sometimes I'm like, wow, that's pretty good, right? So put your human eye on it before it goes out. But I think it can save a lot of time. I think there's a lot of time consuming activities and sales. So anything that can accelerate that, but there is danger for abuse.
Got it. And so where do you see that fitting in with sales or, you know, or marketing in the process as a tool for salespeople?
I see it fitting in because for decades, we've been collecting tons and tons of data. And in most cases, that data just sits there. And then some people mine it for whatever they need it for. But I like the idea of all that information being put through some sort of process and to pull actual insights out of almost all of it, right? So I think that's a pretty cool thing that could happen with your all the information that comes in through your CRM and through different touch points with the customer. Imagine if you were actually starting to put together preferences about how they like to be treated, you know, and that they were actually right, because the information's there. If we were to look through it as humans, we'd be able to make that assessment. And I think once the AI catches up with that, it can be done at scale.
What about the ever popular conversation of, will AI take over sales, or are salespeople in jeopardy of losing their jobs to AI?
I think what is happening because of technology, AI, but technology in general, is it's shifting the responsibilities of salespeople. So it's changing the job description, but not eliminating the job, right? It's opening it up to more personalities besides your traditional sales personality, because people who can leverage technology and process really well can do really well in sales. So that's opening it up. But then it's hurting those who thought, I'm just a home run hitter who closes the deal. I don't have to put the information in. I don't have to use the technology. I don't have to do prospecting. That is going away. So if you think that that's, you know, your role, and maybe there's still, you know, parts of the sales process that need a guy like that or a gal like that, right? And so they're not completely extinct, but you have to be more technology driven. You have to be more process driven. And you may see certain industries lose salespeople, but my guess is they're going to be the ones that weren't paying that much anyway first. Right? Because the most sophisticated sales jobs with the best pay are going to stay pretty complex ahead of where AI can get in, you know, the next few decades, in my opinion.
Yeah, makes sense. Final question for the episode, talking about the future of sales. What are you excited about, and or where do you see the future of sales programs like yours at university?
Well, one thing that's been interesting about coming to Southeastern is that the person who started our sales program, the two people, one is Dr. Kemp, who came on your podcast. The other one is Dean Teray Lopez. So I have a sales dean, which is a very unique thing, right? And one thing that she, and having a conversation with her would be a great thing for you to do too, but she's applied some of this sales program knowledge to the college. And what's unique about sales programs is that we reach out and connect with companies, and specifically corporate sales recruiters, who have budget to sponsor sales programs. And sales programs usually within a few years are making somewhere between 50 to 500,000 a year in corporate sponsorships. And those are recruiting based, ROI based sponsorships, but also companies that believe in supporting sales education. But generally they're looking to recruit the students coming out of those programs. Well, why couldn't that apply to other fields that are in demand? A supply chain company supporting a supply chain department, accounting companies doing that. So she's experimenting with that, and it's, you know, becoming effective. So I think where sales education is going is that we're at the forefront of building those partnerships, and that makes me more relevant. I talk to people in industry. I wouldn't know those characteristics they're looking for in 2023 if I wasn't talking to them, because I've been in academics for 10 plus years, right? So yeah. I stay more relevant. We stay connected. We keep the information practical, relevant. We connect with these technology companies at certain times and get information about what technologies they're using. So it just makes overall the student experience much more useful, because they're getting relevant faculty, they're getting relevant experiences that they can use immediately when they enter the job. And we found, and Sales Education Foundation reports, there's also academic studies that show that the students coming out of these sales programs outperform their peers significantly. Their ramp up time is significantly lower, so time to productivity, and turnover is lower because they know that what sales is before they get hired. So there's just a ton of compelling evidence that produces a real value for the companies that are buying into these sales programs.
And I love what you said, that the dean is a sales dean. What I hear from so many other universities is that, at least in the beginning, and maybe they've changed it somewhere along the way, is that the university, the school, didn't like it, didn't want it, think sales is gross, you can't teach it, right? Like it's not science enough. And, you know, there's that resistance and the faculty and staff who just don't think it should even be there. And it has to be self-funded through corporate sponsorships and kind of championed on its own little island. And then, you know, obviously schools embrace it once the success and the students and the productivity and research-based. But I love the fact that you started that way.
Right? Not fully embraced, but a little better.
They a little more.
The value.
A little less, probably I'm just imagining a little less glared at and ostracized at the company university Christmas party. Versus your program started by a dean that comes from sales background, who's going to see the value in this as well as other programs at the university. Not like, again, not like a company where sales is the god and sales can do no wrong. It's just, it's all part of the machine. It's all equal. And then, you know, how do you support a program like yours? So I absolutely love it. I hope that's a trend that increases, where like it's always leadership, right? The leadership at the top of a company, at a university, the more they embrace it, they understand it, they support it naturally, obviously the more successful the programs are going to be.
Yeah. And there is the occasional, you know, non-sales dean that is supportive, right? It's just less likely, right? But so there are people who see that vision and see that. But one of the major deciding factors to come here was that fact, knowing that I would have buy-in from the top of my college, and I'd have an advocate who's, you know, advocating for us university-wide, and support for all our activities. It's been really wonderful compared to what you would usually face.
Yeah, I love it. I think that's great. Well, and I think it's a great place to leave this. Obviously, the future of sales is in your hands, and other university programs like this, like we closed out talking on part two. It's why I love having these conversations, sharing these podcasts, sharing everything I can online to support this, because it's just, this is how sales is going to change as an industry and become a profession. So Dr. Tim, once again, thank you for coming on here and being a part of the show.
Thank you, Jason. It's been great.
And for everyone tuning in, again, the links will be in the show notes. You can find Dr. Tim Butler on LinkedIn. You can find him on there, follow him, share his content, get more and more of this out there. You can also find the Southeastern Louisiana University program at selu.edu/sales. Again, the links will be in the show notes. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in, being a part of this, helping change sales from what a lot of people still consider a dirty word, or have resistance or issues around, or don't want to even interact with a salesperson unless it's the last resort and the last thing they have to do, and shifting that to something where people want to interact with a salesperson. They know that a salesperson is going to bring them value, will be a trusted advisor. As Dr. Tim said, even in the first episode, a advocate on behalf of the buyer to get them where they want to be. That's what we want all of sales to be like. And as always, thank you for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.